A View from the Mountain by Don Howarth. With Michael Williams as Joseph and Judy Dench as Merope.
Whatever was that?
Stone. Moving.
I thought nobody worked at the quarry now except your husband.
He moves the stone.
Where to?
Up the mountain.
What for?
It's part of his work.
It's a strange job.
No stranger than your own. Did you succeed in seeing the Duke today?
I did. I'll tell you about it at supper when Joseph's back. I like this valley, this old house. I'm glad you asked me to stay.
You're welcome. Nobody's used the room since our son left. Yuli.
Yuli? Is that his real name?
No, his nickname. Ulysses. It's what the schoolmaster called him. Because even as a young child, he was always wandering over the mountains. Over the paths you've ridden these past few days.
Do you expect him back?
Someday, perhaps, if that's the will of God. There's nothing here for a young man since the quarry closed and the village was abandoned.
Where is he now?
Gone to sea. We hear no news of him.
I'm sorry.
Kept captive, no doubt, by some scheming woman on a faraway island.
There are worse fates, I suppose.
Go on. Let me get on with the supper. See? Joseph's on his way down the mountain.
So, what happened then, Father?
Well, what happened then was that I sought audience with the Duke himself. Mm-hmm. Your Grace, I began. Your, forest at Altenford, shown in the government record as covering the lower slopes of the mountain. A fine forest, sir, he interrupted, worth many times the remission of tax it attracts. Large in area. A large in area, Your Grace, I said, but, alas, treeless. Treeless, sir, he said. Not one standing, I replied. He showed neither concern nor surprise. I have trouble with me neighbour, sir, he said. One von Stamm. He rattles me cattle, he shoots me birds, he married me daughter, and now, me God, he's made off with the forest.
Someone's lost a leg down on the estate, didn't they?
Oh, you say so, Joseph.
In the time of Baron Osterman's grandfather. A large ornamental lake. They dug it to honour a visit by the Tsar of the Russians, but its base was limestone, and when the river was turned into it, the water disappeared overnight.
Are lakes on your inventory, Herr von Auerbach?
No. Mines, quarries, forests. Wealth-producing resources.
You're young to be a government inspector.
Nepotism. It's a family sinecure my father revived for me when I came out of the army. I had all sorts of ideas to improve our estates, which disturbed his torpor. My boy, he said, you're a nuisance. I persuaded the Chancellor to revive the office of Inspector of Resources, so you can leave us here in peace and go and inflict yourself on the country at large. It's been worth doing. It's 60 years since the list was last revised, and even then in a slapdash way. It includes mines that have fallen in and quarries like the one here that have ceased production. Mm. It exaggerates our resources, just as we exaggerated our military strength, until the war came.
Were you in the army then?
Yes. Most competent at changing the palace guard, less so, alas, in the field.
I must go and walk round the kettle.
I'll come, if I may.
reckon, to clear the ground of one croft each year.
You've done a lot.
Oh, we've had 8 years of it now, since everybody left. Some of the crops have been well cultivated, some less so. What will make a difference is the drainage when we get further with dredging and banking the stone from the riverbed.
Looks a colossal job for two people.
Yeah, we only planned it, really. Summer evenings. Winter comes early, and once the stones are frozen, well, that's an end of it until the spring.
Must be lonely in winter.
The gypsies pass. We see the shepherd from over the hill. A gang of workmen comes up from the estate most years to get a few loads of stone.
The quarry is so readily workable.
Yes, don't put down in your survey that it's defunct. The stone is good and accessible. The quarry only closed because once the railways were built, the quarries on the east were handier and cheaper for the cities.
And you were left here to look after it?
And to move the stone.
Up the mountain?
Yes. We have the use of our own land and whatever we reclaim without rent. Oh, I miss the singing in the church. All the voices raised, I miss that. Merope, I think she finds the winters long. She was always the center of social life.
I can imagine. Why, if I may ask, do you move the stone up the mountain?
To get it to the top.
But for what purpose?
To build, someday, that was the intention.
A monument or something.
Have you heard about it?
It's a national addiction. My grandfather built them all over the grounds. Monuments, gazebos, obelisks, hunting towers. While the rich in other countries build factories and sink deep mines, our aristocracy spend their dwindling revenues on costly follies. Who ordered this, Baron Osterman?
The Emperor.
The Emperor?
In his youth.
You've been toiling at it for years, then?
Yes.
Alone?
Not at first.
Up that precipice?
There's no way round. The north side is less steep, but there's a bog at the bottom, and it's too long under deep snow.
Is it a tolerable thing to ask?
There's an art in rolling the stone, and where there's an art, there's a kind of pleasure.
Yeah.
It's not always the same boulder. They need different handling. A round one, you can keep more momentum on, but those with some irregularity, they key in better at the crucial points. Then, the changing seasons and the weather, the heat in summer, snow, rain, frost. There's some advantage to be taken of all of them. Fog. There's nothing to be said in favor of fog.
But we don't have much of that.
No. It's an absorbing subject. You mustn't get me started.
It's interesting.
You'll be going back and saying, and you might even record it in your survey. There's a crackpot up that valley, sawing on about rolling his boulders up the mountain.
Not at all. I can go on about my job, this survey. I'm a sort of travelling clerk, that's all. But I enjoy it. I'm in no hurry to reach the end.
A man's work is part of him, whatever it is.
You needn't worry that your quarry here will appear in the survey as wholly defunct. I have a category for every kind of actual and potential resource entered under many degrees of accessibility. I have a category for everything. Classifications occur when I'm riding the mountain paths or when I'm awake in the middle of the night. I rewrite whole sections several times. That's what I do, and that's what I am, the Imperial Inspector of Resources.
Oh, I'm not perhaps quite as devoted as that to the stone.
Everything, Paul. You've been at it much longer. Merope.
You're back early.
I've only been as far as the Rice Estate.
Have they got the hay in?
Most of it, I think. I stopped at the top of the hill and watched Joseph at work through the binoculars.
Yes?
I'd no idea what size of stone he pushes up the mountain.
They're large ones.
Large? The boulder he was moving, a team of horses could barely have pulled it on the level. He looked to be straining as though his heart would burst.
He's accustomed to it.
The sheer exertion. Come on, be accustomed to pain.
Yes.
You both speak as though it were an ordinary job, like mending carts or keeping cattle.
Poor men can't choose their work. We've had a happy life.
It's apparent. Merope, I mustn't persist, but I noticed today the tops of all the hills in the district seem to be of outcrop rock and boulders.
Yes.
Well, is your mountain, Joseph's mountain, not strewn with boulders at its summit?
I believe it is.
Then why roll up rocks from the valley?
It's what the Emperor ordered.
years ago?
Yes.
A caprice of his youth, it must be, which he has long forgotten.
No. A sentence which through the years he's amended but will not remit.
He sentenced Joseph.
And others.
To shift boulders from the valley to the mountain top.
Yes.
Absurd. There's no such sentence in law. What kind of country is this when in the 19th century the emperor passes out sentences like a tribal chief?
He pronounced a more lenient sentence because it was a holiday.
More lenient?
More lenient than hanging.
Tell me.
Well, the holiday had been declared to honour the emperor's visit to the district. The first since his accession. He stayed with Baron Osterman, the present Baron's father. There was a fair, I believe, down on the estate, and horse races. Gypsies came. Bonfires were prepared for the evening round a ring of mountain tops. Joseph and other youths from this village carried logs up our mountain. They'd had something to drink, and they took more with them. And when they built the pyre, they rolled a boulder or two for the pleasure of watching them bound down the scree. Now, there was a man living in the village who was disliked because he stole other people's cattle. The lads, in a tipsy state, started to aim their boulders at his plot, so he'd come back from the fair and have them all to shift. One hit his house, and they began then deliberately to aim at it, shouting banter at those who ventured into the open and signalled them to cease. Finally, when they succeeded in getting a boulder through his roof, they sat down, satisfied, by their stack of wood. Some slept, and some watched the road for his return. They didn't see him because he'd been more drunk than the rest and had not gone to the fair. He was in the house. Their boulder had killed him.
Oh, terrible.
The emperor hadn't been expected in this village, but he arrived. He was deeply affronted. But a lady in his company persuaded him to spare the lives of the young men as a mark of his clemency and in honour of the day. He sentenced them instead to roll back to the top all the boulders they'd rolled down the mountain.
I can imagine he was educated by monks.
But then Baron Osterman, embarrassed and confused and meaning well, asked how they should identify the boulders which had been rolled down. The emperor exploded. To avoid making any mistake, he said they must roll up all the boulders from the valley bottom, and when that was done, he would decide what form a monument might take.
What happened to the other youths?
There were four others. One escaped across the frontier. One went mad, and the other two were killed under the boulders. Most of it happened before my time.
He was under sentence then when you married him?
Yes. I'm not from this village. I came to stay with some cousins when I was 19. That's how I met you.
Yes.
My dear father was rather upset. He found two suitors for me. One a manufacturer like himself, the other from the lesser gentry. But when he met Joseph, he became quite reconciled.
I can understand.
He tried to get the sentence commuted. But they say the petition was pressed too early after Max's escape across the frontier. The emperor responded with a nominal remission, a reduction in the load that must be delivered to the mountain top.
But that didn't bring the end of the sentence in sight.
Oh, no. Joseph does not think of it any longer as a sentence. He accepts it as his life.
Yes.
His strength strikes people. A painter, quite famous, I believe, did a picture of him a few years ago. Perhaps you'd like to see it.
Oh, please.
We don't hang it. We'd embarrass him. There. His shoulder against the rock. Quite a good likeness of our mountain, I think.
It's a powerful picture.
Another time, a man came and wrote down some poetry about him. If I can find it. A French. It's here. Can you read French?
A little. Who wrote this? Was it the poet himself?
No, just an ordinary man who knew the verse by heart. We can't make out French.
Pour soulever un poids si lourd, Sisyphe,
il faudrait ton courage. Sisyphus.
What does that mean?
It's a name. It means the task is impossible.
Yes.
Joseph is condemned to toil forever at a task that can never be accomplished.
Yes.
That's not a sentence, it's slavery. And in the extreme degree.
Yes. But Joseph is not a slave. He's a free man.
We were slaves in the first days. We come down in the evening, stuck up with clay, and scarce able to put one foot in front of the other. The pity in the eyes of the village people made us not men, but victims.
Yes, I can understand that.
Parties of gentlefolk in carriages took to coming up the valley for the sport of watching us. When the boulder escaped us at the top precipice, we'd hear their laughter on the wind. Some sounded hunting horns. Comic convicts we were. France went off his head, and Eric got crushed under the rock. He could have jumped clear, but he didn't. Rudy said, "We'll carry him down with dignity." And we did. Not drooping and broken, as we usually came down. And the next day he said, "We haven't a body, but we'll walk down upright." And we did. Then we started to go out in the evenings to help neighbours clear their grounds of stone, just to show our backs weren't broken. We got able to lift stones other men couldn't budge. When some weight of stone in an awkward place needed to be moved to the castle, the Baron sent for us. We were capable of it. We weren't convicts, and we weren't victims. We were stone shifters.
But I'm descendant.
We learned to accept that. Rudy was older than Max and me and wiser. Resentment, he said, will eat our hearts, and we'll finish like Franz and Eric. We must accept that the sentence is modest.
Modest?
The Emperor could have hanged us, he said. But he left us with a choice, which was more than we gave to the man we killed.
Yes.
Rudy was a happy kind of chap. Joker. You're free spirits, he'd say, wet through in the pouring rain. You can live to enjoy more days like today, or you can jump over the edge.
Drudgery instead of death.
The Emperor did commute the sentence.
Merope, he said, reduced the load. How many thousand boulders does he now require pushed at the top?
Not thousands, just one.
One?
One.
And that is impossible.
So far.
That is the Emperor at his exquisite best.
It broke poor Max. He grew unsure of foot and frightened of the boulders. And one night he made for the frontier.
What happened to the other man, Rudy?
Nothing at the time. He took a different view. Cynically, though the order may have been intended, it fired our ambition to prevail. We'd come near enough to getting a boulder to the summit a score of times. Oh, who can say that anything is impossible if it is only to be done once in many thousand attempts? Sometimes, when we come near, we'd sit up half the night discussing tactics. Sometimes, on a good Sunday in summer, we fretted at being in church and losing the day for a new assault.
And Rudy?
He was killed. He took risks. Cheerful people like him do. One day in winter on that lower pitch, which, as you can see, is not acutely steep, he neglected the precaution of cutting steps in the ice. Working on the lower side of the boulder, he lost his footing. Just slipped, as you might, in the street. It rolled over him. Sometime after that, our child was born, and work mattered less. Passed the hours of the day until I should return home. In time, the lad helped me on the mountain. Ulysses, as everybody called him. Merope didn't favour it, and rightly. There's an unavoidable element of risk with a stone. You need experience, and you need luck. I've always been lucky.
Yes.
I'd like to perch a boulder on that mountaintop. Though, whether I shall be blessed to succeed now, I sometimes doubt a bit.
Thank you. Come in, love.
What a day.
Sit by the fire.
End of the summer, do you think?
Oh, don't say that. Summer's passed too quick.
Yes, I enjoy autumn, though. Mists along the river and the trees down by the valley heavy with apples. Is that old Peter from the castle I saw riding up before the rain came?
Yes.
Did they want a load of stone?
No.
What did he want, then?
He brought a letter.
For us?
Yes.
From Yuli?
No, love. From Werner von Auerbach.
Oh.
The young man from the government who stayed 2 years ago.
Yes, I remember. Is he coming this way again?
No. He's written several times.
Letters to us?
Yes. I took it upon myself to conceal them. Joseph, he means, on your behalf, to ask the Emperor for a pardon.
Why didn't you tell me?
I wanted to spare you the anguish of hopes that might prove vain. The prospects are not good.
No.
You said, when you suffered the Emperor's rebuff at my father's petition, that you would never put your name to a plea again.
Nor shall I.
I feared you might forbid Werner to try.
How far has it gone?
He's had a setback. That's what today's letter says.
I see.
He's been gathering support almost since he left here, and now it proves that the man he was principally depending on has fallen into disfavor. Shall I read what he says?
Please.
I cannot disguise that the dismissal of the First Minister was a most unexpected and severe blow to our hopes, and must delay matters further until we see in the coming months who now among those persuadable to our cause might have access to the Emperor. I am deeply sorry for this reverse, but you may depend upon me to persevere, and I still believe that with the support I have enlisted in society, and the knowledge I have gained of the processes of the court and ministries, we shall still, with patience and God's help, prevail.
It's good of him to go to those lengths.
I believe that in the end he will.
What?
I believe he will prevail.
Set Redstone. What's it under there?
Oh.
What have you brought?
Cheese.
Excellent.
Beer.
First class.
You say that every day.
When you bring it.
Is that a new boulder?
No. An old friend. Bounced down February time into a gully. So I let it lie till the snow melted. I nearly got it to the top once or twice. I
shouldn't be surprised if we succeed today. So, the summer hasn't passed?
No. Beautiful morning. When the sun came up, clouds from yesterday's rain formed along the hillside and floated above the summit into the sky. A sight I never tire of seeing.
It's a beautiful place on a day like this.
Yeah. I should quite like to travel, though.
Yes.
I've seldom been beyond the bounds of these hills. I have an uncle who has a farm on the plains.
They say this time of year, the wheat fields are like seas of gold down there.
Yeah. And I have a cousin who has a fishing boat on the shore of the Mediterranean.
I've never seen the sea.
Nor I.
I'd like to visit my brother's house. I'd like you to see the factory.
Be interesting to watch the machinery.
isolated from people. Before everybody left the village, you were at the center of everything.
No,
the
no.
bell of
no,
every...
No, no, no.
I'd like to go to church. That's what I miss. Not the sermon, but the singing.
That's your vanity. Your fine mountain voice.
Mm-hmm.
If someday, eventually, we were to live at a more populous place...
Yeah?
Then perhaps Yuli might come sometimes.
Yes.
Perhaps in time he might settle close to us.
Quite possibly.
Mm. Family. Grandchildren, perhaps.
Perhaps.
See you, Verna.
Oh, doesn't he look well?
Mm.
I'll see you to your room.
Alas, I can't stay.
Oh.
I must go back to the castle tonight and then go on. I'm galloping round to complete a part of my survey before the autumn.
Is it near completion?
Oh, not the whole thing, just a section of it for which the ministry suddenly has a desperate need. There are, as you know, only two modes of working in our country. Indolence and panic. Your case is proceeding. That's what I came to tell you.
We knew it must take time.
Yes, I haven't yet found the right advocate to bring the petition to His Imperial Majesty. It's been so unpredictable that nobody knows who stands in this favour from day to day.
We're content to rely on your judgment, Verna.
There are several highly placed ministers favourable to our cause, but we must not make a mistake at the vital stage. Once a petition has been brought and rejected, that's the end of it.
Oh, no wonder my poor father failed. He'd no notion of the complications.
Oh, should he? You wouldn't believe how labyrinthine it is. Government in our country is conducted by uncertain procedures, strictly observed, which are concealed from the public and differently interpreted in every ministry and palace office. I haven't been idle. This sack, which I'll leave with you, is full of copies of addresses in support of our petition.
Oh, it's very good of you, Verna.
Well, it'll count for something. We needed an archbishop and a general, and now, by having been delayed, we've bagged the cardinal and the field marshal.
Oh.
Let's shake some of them out.
Oh, Lord. There must be hundreds.
You've worked very hard, Verna.
Volume counts. Some quite influential names from the aristocracy. Or at least that part of it capable of writing a signature. Then the usual ragbag of gentry, industrialists, liberals, supporters of good causes, and of recent months, as we've gathered momentum, numbers of those who wish their name to appear in a rather good trawl of society.
Oh.
Now Baron Osterman has agreed to add his support, influenced directly by some of the names. He held back until now, uncertain of his position as the lord nominally responsible for seeing the sentences carried out. He's drafted a rather good address based on knowing you. I have a note of it. Penitence for the crime, humble and exemplary acceptance of the sentence. For which, unchallengeable though it be in justice, might now be remitted in the known practice of magnanimity and in the name of mercy.
Oh, I don't know about the words.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wrote them for him.
Oh!
It's a formality, a charade. Words, required phrases, it's what holds the empire together. The final form of words required from you personally will not be decided until such time as the emperor indicates that he is willing to receive the petition.
I shall be required to ask for pardon myself.
Formally, yes.
Joseph said he would never ask again when we were refused before.
understand. Joseph, it would be only the last act of a charade which all these scores of people have helped to play. A concluding formality.
Thank you, Werner. It will have to be thought about.
More bread?
No, thanks. There's a cloud of butterflies new to these parts I came through lower down. Green spots on their wings. What'll they be?
Green spots? I don't know.
New to the mountain.
Hmm. Is that a new boulder?
Yeah. I was doing no good with the granite. This one, it's beautiful. Round as a cannonball. I don't doubt I'll trundle this one to the top.
I used to think you minded. I remember the first time I watched you struggling and slipping on the wet rock at the top pitch. Then just as it seemed you had it, the boulder escaped and bounced away. It shook the mountain. I wept.
I remember.
You fell back against the cliff, arms outstretched, fighting for breath. I thought you'd be heartbroken.
Oh, best moment of the day. The attempt made, the job done, the evening mine and yours.
You strode down. You used to tell the boy. As though you've got springs under your boots.
Still feels like that. Bit less bounce in the spring, perhaps.
Well, we had some good picnics up here when Julie was little.
Mm-hmm. He knew stone.
Before he could talk. Do you remember that enormous limestone boulder that made him weep when it shattered down in the riverbed?
He could handle stone. He would have really perched one on the top someday.
He'd have tried. Which is one reason why he had to go away. I think you were surprised that I so readily gave my consent.
A little.
He too would have become obsessed.
Obsessed?
Yes. On days when I kept him to work with me in the fields, he raised his head to watch you every 5 minutes. At our meals together, he talked all the time about the stones and the slopes.
I'm sorry.
It is an obsession, Joseph. I understand how you came to accept and embrace the sentence. As the only means of surviving and remaining sane. But now, you're entranced by the task.
When did you think that?
I think I've known for a long time. It became clear in the night, when I lay awake, wondering how you would respond to signing the petition.
Too much hoping destroys the pleasures of each passing day. The last time we made a petition, our thoughts and talk dwelt so much on the future that we all but lost the enjoyment of present blessings. Poor Max didn't have a wife as I had you, or the philosophy that sustained Rudy. And it broke him.
I know. I shared that false hope.
You did. But you restored to me the pride that had been lost in asking.
Rudy sustained you more.
Not more, but in a different way. He made things clear. What an absurd antic we've lent ourselves to, he said. Why should free men petition for their pardon?
He was clever with words. Simpler people might think that a man under sentence was not a free man.
All men are sentenced to their fate. The difference with us, as Rudy said, is that our sentence was pronounced out loud. To oppose fate is to become its slave. Then life passes, as it did for Max, poor soul, in the frustration of trying to escape the inescapable.
Yes.
It's no more sensible than opposing gravity.
Though you spent a decade or two attempting to do that.
When we were first sentenced, a constable was ordered to ride up from the castle every week to make sure we were at work. And he stopped coming, and somehow we heard we'd been struck off the list as not requiring surveillance. It was then that Rudy said, "We are free men." And so we were.
Yes. We've enjoyed happy years. But I have wondered, in these latter days, what lies before us. When you no longer have strength to move the rock, nor I to make a yield from our stony fields.
Yes.
My love, I'm not like you, a native of this valley. And I am not compelled to the task by sentence, nor drawn to it by pride and love of the contest.
You have sustained me at the task.
And you have sustained me in mine, but they're not the same task. A man's being is defined by his work. He is, first, a shepherd, a quarryman, a schoolmaster, a priest, but a woman's being is in her family. Joseph, the workman after whom you are distantly named, we learn to think of as a carpenter. Mary, we think of as a mother.
That's true.
I chose you not as a man who toiled with stone, but for my husband and the father of my children. We have shared the same life, but no two persons share the same fate. It was yours to raise the stone, and mine to raise children, or, well, as God willed, the one child. But now he is gone. My task here is finished.
I understand what you say.
Merope.
Come in. Come in. Your coachman.
He'll wait. I must return to the castle later this evening.
Is something wrong?
No. The petition. We must proceed quickly. The Emperor's seen it and consented to receive it for me.
Does that mean it will be granted?
No, but it's a big step. Ideally, we should have chosen to bide our time a little before making the final submission, but the minister who's taken up our case is to be posted abroad as an ambassador, and we must take our chance before he leaves.
Must Joseph sign?
That's what I've come for.
What if he refuses?
That would be the end of it. Merope, he must not refuse. I've argued his case in 100
You've
places.
You've worked hard, Bernie. You're very persuasive.
The case speaks for itself. The wrong and the waste of it moves everyone, just as it moved me 3 years ago, and the Frenchman before me.
Frenchman?
The traveller who left you the poem.
Oh, yes, about Joseph.
Yes, about his courage and perseverance. Mm. And also about you. A later verse. I've had it translated. In deepest darkness, many a jewel lies entombed. Flowers bloom and fade in the empty desert.
I should like to live again among people.
And Joseph?
We discussed it the day after you left. He said nothing since.
No. Merope, he must speak now.
Let us all have supper first, if you can stay so long.
So I must put my name to the petition, then?
As scores of people have done these past 3 years.
Yes.
Joseph, it's only the last act of a charade that all these people have helped us to play. A concluding formality, no more.
I should be asking his pardon.
That is the prescribed form.
Which he might withhold.
He is the Emperor. He cannot be bound.
We cannot ask for more.
Joseph, I live less than a week in this house, but I have never been so much captivated by a place, or, if you will permit me to say so, by people. I have come to recognize some of the elements that compelled my admiration. Because, I suppose, of the general drift of my thought, what most found an echo in my heart was your contempt.
Contempt?
Scorn, most purely expressed. By his sentence the Emperor mocked you, and by your scorn you defied him.
That's true.
They told me at the castle about the game you used to play on the constable.
Oh, I know about the constable. What was the game?
The constable had to ride up from the castle one morning each week to see they were at work with the boulder. Joseph and his partners at the time...
Rudy and Max.
...made a point on those days of starting in the middle of the night, so that they'd already reached the top pitch when he arrived at 9 o'clock.
Gave him a climb up to do his inspection.
Ah, but that's not the reason you did it. It was an act of defiance to show your scorn of the sentence and your contempt of your oppressors. By contempt you survived, and by scorn you surmounted your fate.
It made them in their pride free men.
Quite so. But if pardon is offered, then persistence at the meaningless task would lose its only purpose.
Meaningless?
Oh, impossible. And so much acknowledged to be so by the Emperor and yourself that it seems to have occurred to neither side to ask how a raised boulder could be distinguished from those that already rest on the summit. How it could ever be known that the task had been fulfilled.
No, we never thought to ask that.
Joseph, I admire your defiance. I admire the triumph of your will in this most unequal conflict. But it is also possible, looking at things in a more prosaic way, to see you not as an heroic antagonist of the Emperor, but as a collaborator in his farce.
No!
I would not speak so harshly were it not to urge that the charade of the petition at which Joseph now balks would, in some view, seem trivial indeed compared to the charade in which he has so long suffered.
Merope?
I understand why, ever since my father's petition failed, you have refused to ask for pardon. And I thank God both for the trial of the task and for your strength in surviving it. For out of that have grown the blessings of our life together. But times change. People leave. Our son departs. We grow older. Time does not abide as you abide, my love. Nothing happens except by the will of God. But men are his agents. The Emperor it was who pronounced the sentence. And if now it is God's will that the gate should be opened, what agency has he but the civil power?
We should have discussed this more. I didn't know what to think.
Nor I. After the day on the mountain when I spoke too hastily.
No.
The prospect then was too uncertain, and I had nothing to urge beyond my misgivings and vanities. But events now have moved on, and I dare to see in their shaping the hand of grace. If so, the habit of pride, your scorn, as Werner calls it, would exceed itself. Mm. It would not then be the power of the Emperor that was scorned, but the grace of God.
Yes. Then if I refuse, how could you remain here?
While you remain, I will remain.
No. That is asking too much now. How could we live in harmony with the passing years if our thoughts remained behind at the gate that was never tried? Bring the ink and pen.
Joseph.
Will you tell me what to write?
Just your signature. The form is prescribed. Joseph, we are not alone in making a petition to the Emperor.
No.
They're shown to him in large numbers. Most he brushes aside. A few, like ours, he favors through a whim, or because of the weight of influential names. And to those he consents to receive formally, he often first adds an idiosyncratic word of his own.
What does it say?
And there's the standard text for supplicants, 2 pages of it. Then a final sentence, added at the Emperor's dictation.
Before God, I repent my most heinous crime and regret a lifetime wasted in futile labor.
Oh!
It's his final thrust in your long joust together.
Cruel!
I confess the words shocked me. No one else sees these petitions. They go to the vaults and eventually to the bonfire. They don't fall under the public eye.
It would be stated before God.
Yes. I have thought about this ever since the papers were returned to me from the palace. I would not ask you to put your name to a lie. What is stated, though harshly intended, is not untrue. The task has been futile. Indeed, what was most cruelly oppressive was not the toil, but the futility.
What work in the flow of time is not futile?
We do not live in the flow of time, but only the years of a lifetime.
Werner, the rich who can choose idleness do not work without clear purpose. And your purpose is kindle your zeal, as we have seen, first with your survey, and now with this petition which has cost you great labor.
For which we deeply thank you.
Yes, but most of humankind have no goal to their toil, other than the ease of ache and boredom, when the machines stop at the end of the day, or when darkness falls at the furrow's end. Their pleasure is contained within the pain of the work, the small achievement of the coal seam neatly stripped, the haystack topped, the boulder sweetly hoisted over an uneven rise.
I understand that. My survey, I've known from the earliest days, is unlikely to serve any purpose. The first volumes lie unread about the ministries, and all, I fear, will end in the archive. Its only effect has been to increase, year by year, the despair I feel about our country. I'm weary of it, but I approach its end with misgiving.
Franz Steiner.
Oh, yes. Who? Old Franz Steiner. He was the foreman builder at the estate, who put up the great east wing for Baron Osterman's grandfather. The job was far beyond his training and the resources at his command. He had a wretched life. Constantly on the run, with more upsets in a day than most people suffer in a lifetime. Yearning as he grew older and more harassed for the day when the job should be finished and he might retire to his reward, the cottage in the pine woods. When the last stone was placed, he ascended the new staircases and jumped from the battlements.
But the east wing stands.
Yes. Rudy used to acknowledge the distinction between our work and the labor that produces wealth and builds cities, but then he would ask, what difference does it make to the lowly laborer? And what do any of our purposes mean to God?
That we can never know.
I often feel great blessing at evening when the boulder is gone and the mist is rising along the river, and I turn on light legs down the path to home. What purpose more would I seek? What purposes endure? Cities crumble, nations perish, empires pass. The sons of Adam, we were sentenced to work at the beginning of time.
In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread.
Yes. That sentence was rooted within us as instinct. So it means little to talk of pleasure or pain or purpose. All work is futile. The emperor's edicts no less than my boulders. But it is a need, because at the way our souls are cast, and in what through perseverance we do well, we find harmony with time.
You have not spoken so clearly before.
I have had thoughts sometimes on the matter.
Your work has not been futile. It has been the source of our blessings. To confess that our life has been wasted in order to appease the emperor is to deny the grace God has shown us through the years. It would be wrong to do that, whatever the cost.
Then there is no more to say.
No, there is no more to say.
I should not have begun this. It was presumptuous.
No, no.
No. Thanks to you, Werner, things have come to clear understanding, which it is well to know.
I hope I may come again.
You will be welcome.
I think perhaps I should like to help with the stone.
Oh, I never refuse a willing hand.
I must go.
Thank you, Werner.
Yes. And please thank the Emperor. But tell him, I exercise the choice of a free citizen. I choose to serve out my sentence.
Hold it. What have you brought?
Beer.
Good.
And cheese.
Excellent. Oh. Thank you.
It's absurd, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you know what in the animal creation most resembles man?
The ape, is it not?
In form, but in instinct, the dung beetle.
Oh.
Obsessively shifting objects about the surface of the earth, putting them together in a different heap. Which is true, whether you clear a field of stones or build a cathedral.
Yes.
Or carry cargoes across the sea, as Ulysses does. It's unjust that your fate should be sealed by mine.
It's the will of God, and my own free choice.
We should have had longer to think.
It would have come to the same with more time and kinder words. We made the choice in our hearts 4 years ago, before all this began, when you raised the boulder to the summit.
You saw?
From the yard in the shadow of the evening sun. You stood poised on the top edge of the cliff for a moment. And then you let the boulder go.
Let it go? I don't know whether I did it or not. I was desperate for breath, and it was just as much as I could manage to hold the rock against the gentle slope above the cliff edge. When I shifted my foothold, it went.
You could only have been poised there half a minute.
Yes.
It seemed ages. I come from the empty room where I'd laid our two places at the table, where there had always been three. The way the light fell, the looking glass reflected the face of an old woman.
No.
Yes. And then I came through into the yard, and there you were at the top of the last pitch. When the boulder escaped, I wept. From anguish. And also from relief.
You came across the fields to meet me.
Neither of us spoke about it then or since.
No. Spoken of. It makes little sense.
Yes.
Well then, I must get back to work.
Right.
Pour soulever un poids si lourd, Sisyphe, il faudrait tant courage, bien qu'on ait du cœur à l'ouvrage. L'art est long et le temps est court.
Art is long and time is fleeting. And our hearts, though strong and brave, still like muffled drums are beating funeral marches to the grave.
Full many a gem of purest ray serene, the dark, unfathomed caves of ocean bear. Full many a flower is born to blush unseen, and waste its sweetness on the desert air.
In A View from the Mountain by Don Howarth, Michael Williams was Joseph, Judy Dench, Merope, and Graham Blocky, Werner. Other parts were played by Elaine Claxton, Pauline Letts, and Stephen Thorne. The music was specially composed by Max Early and played by Nicholas Cock, Tina Longford, and Nigel Shaw. The sound balance was by Keith Perrin. A View from the Mountain was a BBC World Service drama production directed by Gordon House.